When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Guys, welcome to this bonus episode of Pulp Kitchen, the episode 100 bonus.
That's right.
We don't count the bonus episodes numbered, but they're in there. They're supplemental.
That's absolutely right.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 100. If you haven't listened to it, please go and listen to episode 100.
Yeah, that
came out on Wednesday. Today, George, we're talking about the films that we didn't want to talk about in the main episode. Mm-hmm. Today, you're going to be talking about Bottoms. I'm going to be talking about Anatomy of a Fall.
Yes.
But George, Bottoms, you got the chance to see it this week.
I did.
Tell me more.
I like this because we've sort of spun off and caught different films and we're coming back together.
Very different films,
yes.
I think. Yeah.
Oh yes, very different. So Bottoms is a film directed by Emma Seligman. It's her sophomore film, her second feature film, after she made a film about 2 years ago called Shiver Baby, which was this really tight 79-minute film, which was kind of a black comedy, but also incredibly claustrophobic about a shiver. And the main character, played by Rachel Sennott, who is stuck at this shiver with her family, and there are loads of secrets, and there's, you know, there's an affair, there's lots of stuff. It's tense, it's uncomfortable, it's funny. And it was a really interesting movie. And I was really, ever since then, I was like, oh, I'm going to watch out for what Emma Seligman does next. Yeah. So here comes Bottoms. And Bottoms is actually co-written by Seligman and Rachel Sennott. Now, Rachel Sennott is an actor. If you didn't know these two films, you'd know her. She's in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies as well. And it's produced by Elizabeth Banks, and it stars Rachel Sennott as well, and also Ayod Idabiri from The Bear. And
she was on our list of most exciting actors. Go and check that episode out.
Also features really a whole kind of cast of quite new talent, new faces. Kaya Gerber's in there, you know. Gerber? I think it's Gerber. Cindy Crawford's daughter.
Yeah.
And also Marshawn Lynch, who was a former NFL player. Bottoms. What is the premise of Bottoms? Well, Bottoms has been described as like a raucous, bloody, horny teen sex comedy.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer.
Right, because I hadn't. Here's the thing. Right. I'll get to that. So PJ and, oh God, they're two names. I'm going to just call them Rachel Sennott and Ayod Idabiri. Yeah. They play two gay best friends who are classic high school tropes. You know, they really want to sleep with people, but they haven't slept with anyone. And, you know, you kind of have this opening scene where they go to this kind of like homecoming fair where they see the girls they really want to, like these two cheerleaders who they really want to like sleep with. And it's like kind of funny and awkward. And at the same time, you have all the sort of men in the film, the kind of the quarterbacks are like hysterical, ridiculous characters, very much like a bunch of Kens, actually, like the, you know, Barbie Ken.
Yeah.
And through a random sort of set of plot circumstances, what happens is Rachel Sennott's character and Ayod Idabiri, they set up a fight club. Or, well, ostensibly a self-defense class for women, but one of them's like, it's a fight club for women at the school. And they're saying, oh yeah, it's for self-defense, but really they're doing it with a pretense of trying to get close to and hopefully sleep with the cheerleaders that they fancy, right? That's the kind of setup.
It's like the flip of that from like decades past would be like the football guy joining the theater thing.
Oh yeah.
With the theater
fish
girl.
Out of water. Yeah. Like, well, let's just like lie away. Oh, she's the man kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm. So I'm really excited to see Bottoms, and I, not only because like it was like this, like I said, I was interested in the filmmaker, but because it has this kind of like energy about it and had lots of great reviews. It came out in the States maybe about 2 months ago and looked like rapturous reviews. I was like, this is looking good. And actually, I hadn't watched a trailer. I hadn't watched any material on it because I just didn't need to. I was like, I'm already want to see it.
It's my new thing.
And I think the first thing to say about Bottoms is that it is like, and this did actually slightly catch me off guard. It is incredibly wacky and crazy and absurd and silly. And I've seen people call it like a satire. I mean, I didn't see that in there at all, actually. Okay. But what it is absolutely a film that is punky and different and celebrates women, queerness, and also just being different in the kind of high school context.
I also think, sorry, it's really hard to, I think, do the high school typical teenage drama right now, because I feel like it's become its own side genre, and it's very easy to sort of...
It's like every take almost has to reinvent the wheel.
Yes,
with
completely.
It.
I think it's quite hard to do that at the moment.
And so that's the issue, kind of, you know, done in this really absurd style. I will also say, actually, before I jump into my review, that I also like straight away was like, this film isn't made for me.
Right.
I accept this film is not made for me. No, you know, the way I just described it about being, you know, women, queerness, and difference, it's like I fully recognize that as a straight white male member of the audience. Like, this isn't made for me. That's totally fine. Mm. Here's the thing with Bottoms, though. Despite my excitement for it, and despite being really open to it, I just didn't get on with it. Yeah. And I've been thinking about why it is. And the thing is, I just didn't find it very funny. Yeah. And if it's not funny, it doesn't work at all. And that's not that's a really kind of boring takeaway to say. It's a 90-minute film, so it's not long.
Yeah.
But within 20 minutes, I was like, oh, wow, why is this not clicking with me? And I was really thinking about why it wasn't making me laugh. And I think the first thing is the style, this really, really absurdist style, didn't work and really threw me off. And I'm open season for all kinds of comedy. I love kind of silly, absurd stuff or like deadpan, whatever. I'm open game. But that for this, for some reason, it didn't quite work. I think it's because it begins by kind of presenting itself as something that's, you know, ostensibly set in the real world. You know, like a film like Booksmart, right? Mm. And you know, when they go into high school at the beginning of the film, they turn up at their lockers and there's like homophobic slurs written on their lockers. And I was like, oh, wow, that's an interesting, yeah, like that really kind of grounds the film a little bit. And then they are in the classroom and then this sort of voiceover announcement from the Tannoy announcement from the principal. And he's like, will the untalented gays please come to my office? And I'm like, and some people like laughed at that point, but I was like, whoa, I was like, oh, so...
Is like meant to be absurd.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. So I was like, oh, the parents, so the adults in this film are weird and crazy too. And right. Sure enough, when they go to the principal's office, he's like a completely like buffoon character.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I've been really trying to find a way to describe it properly that isn't just like an insult to like the comedy that's happening. I've been really trying to think about why it doesn't work. And it's like every single character in this film is turning their comedic dials up to 11. And the way I can describe it is the whole film has improv group energy, right?
Yeah.
And in the sense that sometimes things will happen in scenes where it's like, wouldn't it be funny if this person said
this? Came up with this idea today.
And each character, each actor is like, oh, I'm going to get my character to do this. I'm going to get my character to do that. And then in the script, they're like, wouldn't it be funny if we said that? Which is... fine in a way, but after a couple of scenes, I'm like, there is, for me, no consistency here about the type of comedy or anything to kind of ground it as well. So a character would like say something as a joke and I'd be like, okay, I get that. And then two scenes later, they would say something as a different kind of joke, but I'd be like, yeah, but that contradicts what you said earlier. I felt really, really... I was kind of baffled a lot of the time. And it's really hard to describe this film because, you know, it was throwing lots of jokes at the screen and I would almost go to laugh when it would happen because I could see the beats coming. Mm. But then my brain would be like, yeah, but this comedy doesn't work.
You shouldn't have to try and make sense of a joke.
That's it. And I think it's because it really, there was no sort of foothold in like reality or maybe just the style wasn't full enough there. Maybe it wasn't like absurd enough because every so often they would do a scene where they tried to be real and talk about like relationships and like,
yeah.
And then I'd be like, yeah, but hang on, you just did something in the previous scene which completely makes me think that all of this is absurd. But now you're trying to make me care about this thing. It's like, are you going to go full Airplane or are you actually going to make this a bit more something like Superbad? Like, I got really confused. And there's, you know, the violence in this film is really punchy and like crunchy, and I just got really bewildered and lost about where they were pointing the comedy. Like where the every single character, like I said, was dialing it up to 11. And like I said, it has this improv energy, which is like, oh my God, yeah, and wouldn't it be funny if you do that thing? And then you watch the scene and you're like, where the hell did that come from? And it's not like, oh my God, that's so funny. There's a bit like where a character goes home and discovers her mum doing something. And this is relevant to the actual plot of the film as well, which, and I think, and people sort of went, oh wow, and I'm like, no, that doesn't make any sense. Where's that come from? But it's not absurdist enough because it also wants you to make you care in a plot. And I can hear myself getting tangled up in knots about this film, which is really stupid because it's not for me. I there are people in my screening room who are really laughing and enjoying it.
Yeah.
But I sat there, and to be fair, a guy in his like mid-40s, like two seats down from me, we kind of sat there with kind of like a quizzical look on our face. We occasionally smirked and stuff, but I remember him saying to someone when he came in, it was like, oh, I'm really excited to see this. Yeah, my daughter showed it to me. I'm really, really keen to watch it. And we just sat there in stone silence. It's really bizarre. And just to back up what I mean about this improv energy is that sure enough, when you get to the end of the film, they then show the blooper reel and the reel of all the alternate takes of all the lines they tried. And I'm like, yeah, each scene, each line, and the whole film feels like they made it up as they were going along.
Right.
So it never really gelled together. And I don't necessarily need a comedy film to do that. You can have a film like Anchorman, which is so stupid, really stupid and absurd.
It's dialed in.
But it's like, the plot of Anchorman is not really important. It's not making you want to care about
all of
stuff.
Those comedy sequences are very much, they're locked in. They're synchronized like a dance.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Whereas this...
People say that about This Is the End as well. They complain that, oh, it feels like a bit like I'm watching these guys improv. Wouldn't it be funny if the version of the character I'm playing of myself said this at that moment and it sometimes needs to be reined in?
And that's what I kind of feel. It's kind of in this nether... For me, it kind of fell into this kind of nether zone of not being absurd enough to pull off some of the jokes that it wanted to do, but then also not being real enough to make the jokes that are there be ties to anything. And I was really... I was so sad at how quickly I realised that this film was just not making me laugh. It just was not funny. And I felt frustrated. I got to the end, I thought, oh.
Because almost like if you say, oh, this film isn't about me or about, you know, things that I'm into. If it's funny, it should really...
It should work.
It should work. Yeah. It shouldn't be like, well, I'm not the people represented on screen, therefore I can't find fun. If it works, it really should work.
And I was thinking about like Barbie, and there are kind of like thematic overlaps with Barbie. And you know, Barbie is loony and crazy and silly as well. But some of it really makes... Some of Barbie like is really, really funny.
Yeah.
There's just nothing that funny in this. It's a lot of people going like, yeah. Character will then say something a little bit too far, a little bit outrageous, and people go, what? No, I just think, well, you're kind of like saying something a little bit strange.
Maybe when comedy's really arch and absurdist, like if you think of like Hot Fuzz, everybody else's lines are really weird, apart from Sergeant Angel, and he acts as a very good anchoring point for the audience to be like, oh, okay, like I'm discovering everyone being strange with Sergeant Angel and that, and he plays quite an important comedic role for the whole film.
But also, with a film like Hot Fuzz, the comedy is like machine-tooled.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Scripted, everything is deliberate.
With every whip and camera.
It's not riffing. They haven't got to set and gone, okay, try out this thing. And I do find like, it's much more of a tradition in American comedy with things. Improv is much bigger in America anyway.
SNL style.
SNL, Second City, Upright Citizens Brigade, where they, you know, they've all come from comedic roots and they bring that kind of riffingness to movies, which you didn't get in something like Hot Fuzz, where it's machine tooled. I hear myself talking about this film and I don't think I've done a great explainer, because all I've basically said is, here's the film, I didn't really find it funny and I don't really know why, but I think it's... I even tried to find other reviews. A lot of the time people are just absolutely glowing about it. And it could be that maybe I was caught off guard by how weird it is. If I knew that it was going to be so absurd, if I had seen the trailer and I got an idea of the tone, maybe that would have clued it in. But ultimately, I just don't think the jokes are that funny. I think the jokes are quite, some of the jokes are quite lame. They're quite like low level. Like I just don't think the jokes are that funny in the film.
Yeah.
Sorry. Wouldn't it be crazy if this character did this thing? Hey, I'm going to... I got a bomb. What?
Not really. Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, there you go, guys. If you get the chance to see Bottoms and you have
also, sorry, I'm just interrupting.
I do that.
I came home and I told Anna about it. She was like, "Why is it called Bottoms?" And I'm like, "Why indeed?" Because the idea is that they're like, we're the bottom of the bottom, you know, no one wants us. We are like, we're the bottom of the group. We need to get up to cheerleaders. And I'm like, you guys are intelligent, attractive and smart. Intelligent, attractive and funny.
Do you know, like, when gay people are bottoms, it means...
No, it's not, but it's not.
It's not that.
I thought it was going to be a gay thing.
Oh.
I thought it was going to be a gay pun, but it's not.
It's not. Oh. I thought that was it.
I thought it was going to be that. Unless it's in there and I missed it, which I guess I could have done. But like, there's literally a bit where she's like, we are the bottom of the bottoms. We got to get up there.
Okay, that's different then.
So it's like in between us. But I'm like, you're not. You're like really intelligent. You're really funny.
Yeah.
You're really attractive. Like you can't tell me that you're like Will McKenzie in the in-betweeners.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Anyway, it wasn't for me.
If you are a bottom and you had some different thoughts on the film, please send them in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. Or if you agree with George, we'd love to hear from you as well.
Yeah, please do, because I'd love to hear, with all films, it wasn't for me, but if people out there, if they enjoyed it and it found its audience, great.
Yeah, I'm actually more interested to hear from people who like maybe feel slightly differently from their experience of the film than us. Because I love hearing from like the Killers of the Flower Moon people who are like, oh my God, isn't it great?
Yeah.
And we're like, oh my God, yeah, isn't it great too? But yes, would love to hear more impressions. I might try and see it when it's out. But
and
we'll see.
When I came out, there was a group of women behind me, and they were talking with each other like, "Oh, it's so funny the way it kind of like inverted tropes and how anarchic it is." And and I was kind of like, "Well, I'm glad you guys found that. I can see it being anarchic, but I just didn't think it was funny."
There's also some comedies which people really think are off the cuff that aren't. Like everyone's like, "Oh, Curb Your Enthusiasm, like it must be so improvised." Yeah. Larry David in every interview, it's like, "No, like it's a script. And it's locked in." And we rehearse it until it's right and it's executed.
Yeah.
Like there's sort of, like people do little bits in the beginning, but they also know their character better. But like the vision is very much locked in, and I think it's sort of an illusion sometimes, the idea of something being improvised, when actually like you can tell when something feels like it doesn't edit nicely sometimes when things are improvised.
Yeah. Anyway, I've vented my spleen enough. So James, the winner of the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival this year was Anatomy of a Fall.
Yep.
Just about.
Anatomie d'une chute.
D'une chute.
En français.
Oh, chute, I fell down. Oh, Anatomie.
No, it's a very serious movie, George.
Yeah, it looks like it. Tell us about it.
Anatomy of a Fall. Once again, George, didn't watch a trailer, knew very little going in apart from won a big fancy award and like another just like general thumbs up from someone else who had seen it and that it was good. Anatomy of a Fall is directed by Justine Triet. I'm sorry if I've like not got the right pronunciation there. Is set in France in a mountainous region of Grenoble in France. And we presented with this couple, Sandra and Samuel, but originally only we just presented with Sandra at the day in question, and she's being interviewed about her literary work as a writer by a journalist, and they have a son who's partially blind from an accident in the past, and this whole incident occurs where Samuel, the husband, is in the attic blasting music really, really loud, like imposing all over the house because he's sort of fixing the insulation in the roof. And the interview ends and Sandra decides to do a bit of work in her bedroom, put some earplugs in and go to sleep. Meanwhile, their son takes their dog out for a walk. And when the son comes back, he sees the house that they live in with the music blaring. And he eventually sees, because he's partially blind, the sight of his father surrounded by blood, dead, right below the window where he was working. And the music's still playing, and his dog obviously sees it first, and then he feels the presence of his father's body, screams to get his mum. His mum rushes out, and their father is dead. And so, you know, they're both absolutely traumatized, and they go through this whole process. And there's now this question of, did he fall from the attic that he was working in? Did he jump in an attempt to commit suicide, or was he pushed? And below the window where he falls is a sort of like a functional box where like you might keep firewood or something where he could have potentially smashed his head and died. And the next 2.5 hours is a study in increasingly intense detail investigating his death and subsequently the analysis of their relationship, right? And it starts from a very matter-of-fact autopsy of the body, which has a blow to the head, which could have been from where he could have hit this box. And it's an inconclusive autopsy where they don't know for sure if this is a blow. They didn't know if how the body fell, if it was a push, if it was a fall, if it was something else, right? And what follows is a full forensic analysis at first of the house and the window and test bodies. And, you know, she has to bring a lawyer involved to sort of, you know, ensure that she's not going to get, you know, accused of murder. And because all of that is inconclusive, what then follows is an analysis of their relationship, what their dynamic was like. Every single thing that was said in the lead up to that day, which could potentially allude to suicidal tendencies, motive to commit murder, and how responsible Sandra is to that, okay? And as a mystery story, I loved how open it was, and the film is very ambiguous for most of its runtime as to what really happened, but it never really tries to withhold information. The camera and the cinematography are very just matter of fact, and they're always in service of giving the audience the correct information as and when it comes. And that could be like standard cinematography with a camera presenting with something, or the camcorder that a forensics team is using to capture stuff around the house and they reveal information as you do, or the newsreader outside the courthouse going through there. It was really, really gripping. I thought it was just brilliant. Wow. It's long at about 2.5 hours, but I think it really deserves to be. It was chilly in its setting and like bone-chillingly raw and and honest to watch. There's this whole sense where language between the family members is really important, and it's sort of a 50-50 split between French and English, and none of the characters speak in their native tongue. So Sandra is German and she speaks in English to her husband, who's French. And there's sort of this there's this idea that's slightly lost on, I think, us as Brits, because we sort of all just speak English. But in Europe, there's more this idea of, like, you know, a French person might meet a German person, but the French person doesn't speak German, the German person doesn't really speak French. They end up in this like middle ground of English, and their son might speak a bit more French than the other ones. So there's a different connection, and there's something that's lost in communication between partners, which I think we take for granted a bit because we're quite used to, you meet someone, they're probably going to speak English. You're going to speak English as a default. I just found that quite interesting. But there's a sense that no one's really understanding each other. Things are being lost. Sandra Hüller, whose character's name is also, so everyone's, this is, I'll get onto this point later. Everyone's
name is the name
of the character, right? So Sandra Hüller, I think, has given the acting performance of the year.
Wow.
I'm like very happy to call that
right
away. Her like complete command of portraying emotion that's very clear and also withholding something to herself was just like so well done. And I think it's a performance that I kept thinking, like, why is this working? I think it's just really balanced. And it could so easily have drifted into melodrama. And there are very few moments where the film is like, this is the most dramatic scene. But when it's there, it's like, it's really bone-chillingly raw and emotionally real. And it's like that horrible feeling when you're listening to two people arguing and you really should probably like go out for a coffee. Just so, so well done. It has a courtroom drama for most of the film that I think would make Aaron Sorkin purr.
Wow.
I think it's long. It's 2.5 hours, but it's deeply complicated. And I think it really earns its right to be that complex because the devil is in the details, and all the details were just great. And it just reveals information to you at the right amount of time. I think it maybe indulges in itself a bit too much in being this like sweeping relationship study. But I think winning the Palme d'Or, kind of like, you kind of have to do that to win the Palme d'Or, and it just does it really well. It's essential. It's go out and watch this.
Right, wow.
Really, really, really good.
I'm very jealous. Because I feel like you saw the good, good one. Yeah. You got the top, and I got the bottom. Well, that's fantastic. We actually have an email from someone about Anatomy of a Fall.
Oh, I'd love to read it out. Get it out. While you do that, so there's this. So in part of the film is a study on the literary work. So because like so much has to be deduced and inferred about this relationship, right? And they need to decide, well, when you did say that thing, what did he mean? And what is that dynamic you have? And when you took that idea, how did he react to that? Because they need to figure out, like, does she have a motive to commit murder? Does he have a motive to commit suicide? Or was it just a coincidence? And one of the things that this idea that they adopt is that she writes in her novels about very personal things that have happened to her and very personal conversations. And in certain moments in her books, she talks about like anger and rage and willingness to do something. And of course, in court, they're like, you can't simply take a thing of fiction and use that. And it's like, yes, but you've used the same names as the people in real life as you've used in fiction. And there's something really horrifyingly meta that this entire story has the same names of the actors in it. And so you're watching this being like, who wrote this and are they okay and what happened? But you can't really focus because you have to get the detail of what's being said. And it's just so, so realistic and raw. I keep saying raw, bone-chilling. That meta bit when I was walking out the cinema was really quite like a lot for me to handle. I was like, I can't process the layers of how deep this goes, but yeah, it's great.
Fantastic. We did have some people write in about it. Jared wrote in about All of Us Strangers, which I reviewed from the London Film Festival, which we will review properly. I will read out your email, Jared, once James sees it and everyone else goes to see it in January. But he actually writes in saying that Anatomy of the Fall was his film of the year until he saw All of Us Strangers, actually.
Fine, okay.
Which beat it. But I remember seeing Jared's email come in and I thought, ooh.
Yeah, it shoots to the top of my list, which I haven't made yet. Yeah. It's comfortably in the top five, potentially in the top three.
I don't know when I can make it, but when is that out? I think it's out on the 3rd or the 3rd of November?
Yeah, maybe the 10th? Within a week of this coming out.
Right, well, there you go. You have it there from James. So go and see Anatomy of a Fall.
It's essential. It's giving like... I wouldn't be surprised if some people aren't 100% in love with it, but it's worth going and seeing and just, yeah, like, don't, no need to reveal. You know what? It's actually hard to spoil because... Yes, it's ambiguous, but what would be spoiled is like so detailed and complex.
It'd be hard to explain.
It'd be hard to explain it, and it's just so well written. It's like novelesque in how much it unfolds to you, and you come out 2.5 hours like, God, I feel like I've just read an entire diatribe, and like the inherent structure of a court case is to get all of the detail, all of it out there. The lawyers who play all the different sides are just great. Okay, don't want to gush too much.
Anatomy of a Fall. If you have seen it, let us know what your thoughts are. Let us know. That's it. That's our reviews. We reviewed things on this bonus episode.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this bonus episode of Pulp Kitchen. As you know, we said at the top of the episode, we just put out our 100th episode. So if you haven't listened to that yet, go and check it out. Next week, we will keep going. The show isn't being... Imagine if we just capped it at 100. It's done.
That's it. Boom. Done. That's it. Like, by the way, this is our last show.
Hot 100.
Drop the mic.
We did a whole rebrand. Just ended it
just
there.
Just one episode.
See you next week, guys.